You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, September 12th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, RJ Eskow, Campaign for America's Future. To follow up on a conversation I had while hosting Countdown, filling in for Keith Olbermann, sort of a depressing interview, or at least the result of it was. Then later in the program, to preview the Tea Party debate tonight by the Republicans, sponsored by CNN and the Tea Party Christian Extremist Express. I'm not sure exactly what the name of the group is. We will be having never-Senator Katherine Harris on the program to set the table for us. An insider's view on what's going to be going on tonight. It seems like these Republicans are going to do this every week now. Hopefully it'll get really ugly. Also on the program, an update on New York 09, the price of being a moral scold, I guess. And an update on the union battles out in Seattle. Some union guys got pretty ugly. And frankly, you know, I don't advocate violence at all, but I think it's quite clear that there are at least still some unions who are willing to fight for what they perceive as them getting screwed by different corporate entities. We will talk more about that as the program continues. I've got a couple of emails, but let's go to this clip. Today, you should know that President Obama is sending the American Jobs Act to Congress, I guess in legislative form, and that seems to be a little bit early, and I got to double check on that. It's been a proposal, and my sense was that he was waiting to send it as a piece of legislation to come up with more deficit reduction proposals. Now, the American Jobs Act is getting mixed reviews. There is a sense that, well, obviously, it doesn't go far enough, but nothing's going to in this day and age in terms of creating more jobs for Americans. There is a sense that most economists feel that this will help. It may not be enough, but it's better than nothing. And there is, of course, significant debate as to the efficacy of tax cuts, payroll tax cuts, or a payroll tax moratorium. It will put, well, you remember, in December, the payroll tax moratorium that was imposed as part of the larger tax deal expires. President Obama is proposing to extend that and to add another 50% to that tax cut. Essentially, I think bringing the payroll tax on the employee side down to about 3%. like I say, there is some dispute as to the efficacy of this in terms of creating jobs. The empirical data shows that if you give someone a payroll tax cut, they will save that money. Don't know why. But when people have this much debt and whatnot, the idea of saving and this much job instability, the idea of saving becomes more paramount. With so few opportunities for someone at that level to make money from investment, or they need to pay down debt, that's what they'll do with the money. This is as opposed to direct spending by the government. That's why direct spending by the government is so much more efficient. It has such a greater multiplier effect because it guarantees that the money will go into the bloodstream of the economy and get spent over and over and over again. As opposed to $1 that you give as a tax break to anybody, whether that's it's even far less efficient if you give it to a wealthy person, to a millionaire or a billionaire, because they just take that money and they just speculate with it in assets that usually provide no real value to society. That dollar actually just gets taken off the table. Whereas if you spend a dollar, if the government spends a dollar by hiring someone who works in construction, they get that dollar, they go out and they spend that dollar at a lunch place. The guy who owns a lunch place, he spends that dollar because he goes and buys a pair of shoes. The woman who owns the shoe store, she goes and spends that dollar. It has a multiplier effect. But another element of the deficit cutting provision that will follow this proposal that President Obama has already floated, and it's getting talked about more, is the idea of raising the Medicare eligibility age. We've talked about that on this program. So I was interviewing Representative Cleaver, the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, on Countdown Friday night. And at the end of I didn't do a great job on that interview, frankly. I'm not a big fan of interviewing politicians. But near the end of it, I asked him about raising the Medicare eligibility age. Here it is.
Let me ask you, would you support raising the Medicare eligibility age?
I think that's something that we can consider, but not for this generation. I mean, you know, if we did it 10 years from now and factored in the savings, then I could do it. But just doing that right now, as many of people are struggling trying to come out of this recession, I don't think I can support it.
Well, Congressman, I got to ask you, why would you support that even 10 years from now? I mean, there's no evidence it's going to save much money, and it's going to make it much harder for those 65 and 66-year-olds to go and get insurance.
Well, here's the deal. We know we've got to do something to make sure that Medicare continues. Now, we have a number of deals we can do. One is a means test. You know, that the extreme, that those who are extremely wealthy should not take Medicare, or even those who are going to, you know, get $150,000, $200,000 a year in retirement shouldn't take Medicare. I mean, there are some things we can do to tweak it without damaging it. Look, I have an 89-year-old father. I hope to match him in age. I'm not interested in doing anything to damage a strong democratic principle, and that is that we're going to protect those who are in the sunset of life, and that we're also going to make sure that Social Security is there for them to live on.
Representative Emanuel Cleaver, I'm sorry, we've got to go, but I appreciate your time, sir. Representative Emanuel Cleaver, Democrat of Missouri and chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, thanks very much.
Now,
good to be with you.
I think he was quite surprised to get that question from me, and I think he was quite surprised to get that response from me. Now, I had to go. That last question, I just got in there when they were like, you got 30 seconds. And I'm like, oh, fuck it. I'm going to ask this question. And then I had to follow up on it. Now, I spoke to R.J. Eskow this morning, And we'll play that interview in a second, because he has written a piece about just how bad a policy it is to raise. And I've mentioned in the past, but I wanted to really drill down on this, particularly in light of the fact that one of the, at least on paper, more progressive members of Congress is saying, without batting an eye, eh, if you know, it's 10 years down the road, I could do that. And then after we talk to RJ Askow, we could talk about the other half of what he said is the means testing. This is all bullshit. And so let's talk to RJ Askow. He will address this question of the value of raising the Medicare eligibility age, because this is coming down the pike in the next 2 months. This is all you're going to be sold this bill of goods. And apparently, a lot of people have already bought it without looking at what's inside this bill of goods. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. On the phone, it is a pleasure to welcome to this program Richard Askow. He is he's at the Campaign for America's Future, and you can check out his writing all the time on Huffington Post. Welcome to the program, Richard.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sam.
All right, so let me just I'll tell you why I wanted to talk to you today. On Friday night, I last-minute fill-in for Keith Olbermann on Countdown, and on the program, I interviewed Representative Emanuel Cleaver. He is the Congressional Black Caucus Chair. And we were ostensibly talking about the jobs program. At the end of the interview, I asked him, what do you think about this proposal for the raising of the age of Medicare? This seems to be on the table. It sounds like something that the super committee is being encouraged to do by the president, to go beyond the number of cuts that they need on the super committee to avoid the trigger. And this is a proposal that's out there. And I wanted you to tell me, well, first off, let me give you a softball. Is this a good idea?
Bad idea. I'll answer the softball that way. In fact, it may be the worst idea to come out of Washington in a season of terrible ideas. It may be the worst one we've seen yet. It's just disastrous.
All right, well, walk us through this. Why is this such a bad idea? It sounds great. We're all living to 120 years old now, and if you can, you know, well, who needs their Medicare at age 65? I mean, why not wait till 67?
Well, first of all, if you wait till you're 67, people who are between 65 and 67 cost a lot more money to give medical care to than younger people do. You think this living to 120 comes cheap? It's not cheap. This is a very expensive group of people to cover. If they don't have Medicare available to them, how are they going to get health insurance? They'll have to buy it. And right now, the law allows insurance companies to charge a lot more for older people than it does for younger people. So they're going to have to either come up with huge sums of money, or and maybe there'll be a subsidy to help some of them, but they'll either have to come up with huge sums of money, or they'll go without insurance, and then we'll have another huge uninsurance problem again. So that's problem number one. And you know, while it's one of those things that looks good because it saves money on the federal budget, there's a line item that gets a little lower, but they've done a detailed study that shows it would cost more money overall, because it would save something like, oh, I don't know, $5 or $6 billion a year for the federal government, but it would cost almost $4 billion more total to everybody else, and that includes the states, and it includes private health insurance plans, and it includes people's out-of-pocket costs. It would cost people that age another $2,000 or $3,000 a year. And remember, we're already on track to raise Social Security, to raise the retirement age for Social Security 2 years. So now you're going to have to try to get a job at 65 when you're very expensive to buy health insurance for, and it's going to cost you a couple thousand more out of pocket. I don't know. It doesn't sound like a good idea to me.
So for all this talk that we're hearing, we are looking at something that over the course of 10 years will save less than $60 billion as a line item for the federal government. But like you say, There was this Kaiser Foundation study which showed that the net cost of dealing with the health care for these people will actually go up. So it's going to come out of, I guess, presumably their pockets, these elderly pockets, or they're going to end up going into the emergency room, and we're going to end up paying for it through our own insurance costs.
That's exactly right, and that's exactly the problem we've been trying to solve now for the last couple of years. So it makes the entire situation a lot worse. You know, this is just one of those ideas that looks good on paper, and everybody says, you know, I don't see the big deal, until you start, you know, running the numbers and thinking about the human impact it's going to have on people. Look, one of the things that's going to happen is that companies really won't want to hire older workers now because it's going to make their benefit costs too high. So you think it's tough for those 66-year-old salespeople at Saks to get a job now, just wait until you also find out that the company's going to have to pay a lot more in health insurance, too. Believe me, it's going to be tough for people.
And is it going to put a strain on the actual Medicare system? In other words, while these 65 and 66, 67-year-olds represent an increase in the risk for the risk pool for private insurance, because older people tend to get sick more, they move into the private insurance, basically adding not a bunch of 25-year-olds who they pay their insurance, but they don't use it, or I should say now 27-year-olds. They pay their insurance and they don't use it. But it will also shrink the risk pool for Medicare, won't it? I mean, also basically create a higher concentration of sicker people in Medicare?
You know, that's one of the best leading questions I've been asking in a long time.
Thank you.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. As people age 65, 66, 67, and on, their health care costs go on an upward slope. So if you take the relatively younger pool of 65 to 67-year-olds out, then Medicare becomes more expensive. And then what happens next year or the year after that is that Emmanuel Cleaver's replacement is saying it doesn't seem so unreasonable to raise it to 70 because costs are going up so quickly and we don't know why. You know, they're not thinking systematically. One other thing it will do, too, is one of the few things that's keeping our runaway health care costs in this country under control at all is the fact that Medicare has some brake on this sort of runaway freight train of healthcare costs with our private healthcare system. The more that you shrink that and leave it to the private health insurance sector, the more that freight train starts to barrel out of control. So the impact of Medicare rates and Medicare rules on overcharging and overtreatment gets less and less and less. The system gets worse and worse and worse. 10 years from now, we're having this conversation about, shouldn't we really raise the Medicare age to 98 because we just can't afford it anymore? Instead of thinking systematically about what the problem is that we're facing.
See, this is the important thing that I don't think people fully understand, is that when we talk about the runaway costs of Medicare, we're not talking about the costs of Medicare. We're talking about the costs of what Medicare pays for.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And what we've got now is a system of private health insurance for everybody that's not under Medicare or Medicaid, or the vast majority of people that aren't. We're talking about a system of for-profit hospitals, a system of for-profit drug companies, and so really, and by the way, a system where doctors are paid more if they treat more. And there are studies that show that from one county to the next, if there are more cardiac surgeons, there's more cardiac surgery. It doesn't matter. People aren't sicker. People aren't different. Anatomy isn't different. The population may be the same. More surgeons, more surgery, because that's how they get paid. So the more that Medicare has taken out of the system, then the more that this kind of out-of-control, profit-driven machine takes over. So people aren't really thinking globally about what the problem is we're trying to solve here.
So with if this is the case, if in fact that by by dumping these people, these younger, healthier, relatively speaking people from Medicare rolls into the private insurance rolls, that it's actually going to increase the rate of cost of medicine across the board, which ultimately we now know doubles back and ends up being subsidized by taxpayers one way or another. And it ends up subsidizing a less efficient system of delivering this health care as opposed to Medicare. Why are we doing this? I mean, I don't understand how I can ask this guy, who is ostensibly one of the liberals in the House, and he can so cavalierly and so casually say, "Yeah, I got no problem with that raising that eligibility age 10 years in the future." I mean, I just don't understand. Do these people not even spend the time to Google it and check out what you've written on Huffington Post? I just don't understand.
Well, you know, I think part of it is that they don't spend the time to understand the issue. I think the other part is that they're not motivated by, look, they don't get a bonus or a pat on the back or a re-election because they've successfully managed healthcare costs. They get a bonus for looking like they're doing something. So until the public says to them, look, we don't want you, here's what's going to happen if they do this. Number one, all health insurance costs are going to go up. They're going to have a signing ceremony fired up, ready to go. Remember that. They're going to chant that. They're going to have a signing ceremony. Then 5 years later, every health plan in this country for every working American is going to have even fewer benefits. Your out-of-pocket costs are going to be even higher. You'll pay $80 per prescription as a copay, on and on and on, to offset the cost that this is thrown back into the private system. You'll struggle like hell when you're 66 to get medical care, but they're counting, they're either not thinking it through and or they're counting on people not connecting the dots. So I feel that our job is to help people connect the dots before it happens and say, look, don't do this crazy thing. I'm going to hold you accountable if you do.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think there is something that is sexier to the idea or easier or to say simply raise the eligibility age. But you make the point in your piece that this is a functional cut of 20% of your average Social Security benefits.
Yeah, that's just a matter of doing the math. Now, that's the bad news. The good news, if you want to put it this way, is you don't have your Social Security benefit because they're going to take that away too. But if you think about it in terms of the magnitude, yes, that's what it is. It's like just the number that Kaiser estimated, which for technical reasons I think might be a little low, but whatever it is, just take their number. That's like a 20% cut. You know, people throw these numbers around. People say things like, let's adjust the cost of living adjustment, you know, the president's big idea, because what's that going to cost the average old person? Like, $500 after, you know, 10 years or whatever. Well, yeah, but we're talking about the average woman, retiree trying to get by on, $8,900 a year. You cut $500. That's a lot of, trips to the grocery store. So this detachment from, you know, the guys we're supposed to think of as the good guys, this detachment from the human reality of what they're proposing, I've got to tell you, sometimes it blows me away.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's just a cut. It's just a prettier, more wonkish way of saying we're going to cut your benefits, and it will save the government money in the short run, but it won't save you any money. It won't cut down on health care costs, and we're going to end up paying for it on the backside anyways.
Right. I mean, my answer would be don't even talk to me about something like this. I don't want to hear from you, my congressman, my senator, my president. I don't want to hear from you about this ever again until you've done something about pharmaceutical costs and some of the other abuses in for-profit hospitals and the private health insurance. Don't even come to me with this. Take care of that problem first, and we'll talk after you fix that. That would be my attitude.
Well, I hope they listen to you, Richard, but I'm afraid that they're not. And like you say, this is the first step in trying to fight a proposal like this, is explain to people exactly what it is. Richard Esgow of Campaign for America's Future, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Sam. Appreciate it. And he increases the number.
All right, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. So I want to just talk about means testing, because Representative Cleaver, when I think I surprised him by saying, why are you supporting raising the Medicare eligibility age? It's not in the least bit helpful. I mean, think about this now. You're talking about a minuscule savings. Even if you don't calculate in the implications for the program in the long run and what the government spends in other areas, making up for the fact that these people are going to go into the private market and not get health care. So we're going to end up paying probably double the rates on them on the back end when they get sick. You're still only talking about $6 billion a year. Now, it's a lot of money to you and I, maybe not to, you know, Bill Gates. Even Bill Gates, it's a little bit of money. But that's not going to save Medicare. That's not going to save our health care costs. It's ridiculous. What do we spend in a month now on our wars? It's like 2 months of two of our useless wars and killing people. Be that as it may, the representative talked about means testing. And this is the exact same argument for Social Security means testing. Do you want wealthy people to get these tiny benefits? They don't need them. They get this payoff from their social insurance, but do you want them to get it, even though they've paid into it? Why not just have wealthy people don't get these benefits? Now, we know the political implications of this. It weakens the program because people perceive it as then becoming a welfare program as opposed to social insurance. But Krugman had a piece on it, I guess, back in July. The usual argument against means testing, which is entirely valid, is that A, it doesn't save much money, and B, it messes up a relatively simple program. The reason it can't save much money is that there are relatively few rich enough to be able to afford major cost sharing. In other words, we have, though our wealthy are incredibly wealthy, there's just not as many of them. And so the amount of money that would go back into the system because they're not taking any Medicare insurance is not enough to really present any real savings against the added cost of creating an infrastructure to determine whether or not they are deserving of their Medicare benefits. Then he goes on to say means testing would turn Medicare into something more intrusive like Medicaid. But there's a further point I haven't emphasized. If you want the well-off to pay more, and this is what I've been arguing for Social Security, it's just better to raise their taxes. And the right wing will say, but if you raise the taxes on wealthy people, they won't want to work as much. They'll be so inclined to just go up to somewhere, to Galt's Gulch in Colorado and stay there and not earn any more money because it's a disincentive. Krugman makes the point, isn't means testing also a disincentive? I mean, Medicare is a benefit. It has a dollar figure attached to it. If I know that I'm going to make all this money and I won't be eligible for Medicare, maybe I'll go to Galt's Gulch for a tax rise. Would get a significant amount of revenue from the very, very rich, while means testing would end up imposing the same burden on a $400,000 a year working Wall Street stiff that it imposes on a $1 billion a year hedge fund manager. In other words, raising taxes is actually a more equitable way to so-called means test for Medicare and for Social Security than would creating a dividing line. Anybody who makes over $250,000 or has X number of assets is lumped in the same boat as someone who has X times X income or assets. So this whole debate about Medicare is really just a huge, huge smokescreen. Now, there's every reason to believe at this point that none of this is actually going to go through anyways, because the Republicans apparently are terrified about passing this Jobs Act because it just might work. And the worst thing that could happen to a Republican is that Americans would get jobs, that this American Jobs Act would work. This is simply the reality. And they're rooting for the failure of this Jobs Act and are so afraid that it might actually help in some small measure that they're going to vote against anything that they would have voted for at any other time in their sad, pathetic lives as legislators to stop it. It's a $447 billion package. The bill is headed to, I believe, Congress today. And according to the LA Times and Politico, for that matter, it is a quandary for the Republicans. Goes on to say, this is Obama's on the roads. Why do we appear ready to hand him a win? Said one senior Republican aide who requested anonymity to discuss the matter freely. In other words, I don't want my boss to get... Uh-oh. We got a phone call coming in. Hello?
To accept, press 1. To send a voicemail, press 2.
What is this? Let's see. Hello?
Hello?
I'm sorry.
Samuel.
Oh, yeah.
It's Kathy.
Oh, yes, Kathy. Jeez, I'm sorry. I didn't, at first, I didn't hear you on the phone. It's, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just breathless. It's been a whirlwind.
No, I'm sure
it's been a whirlwind.
Let me just tell everybody, ladies and gentlemen, it's never was Senator Katherine Harris. But you were a congresswoman. You were, of course.
I was indeed. And now I'm just out and about with Michelle Mabel and Marcus. And wasn't Rick Perry wonderful? You know, Sam, I'm just still over the moon over, you remember the applause over the executions. It just still warms the cockles of my heart. I can still hear the applause ringing in the hall for the wonderful gift from the Father God of state sanctioned killing.
Well, I'm glad that was so wonderful for you to. I mean, now I got to ask you. Now, of course, tonight is a big debate for the Republicans. It's sponsored by the Tea Party and the Tea Party network, CNN. And
but Sam, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I don't know if you know this, but I'm in Egypt.
I didn't know that.
I'm in Egypt. I'm covering. I watch the debates from there. We're going to be covering them.
Wait, what are you doing in Egypt?
What am I not doing in Egypt? This is the better question. First of all, we've been having many celebrations. We had a 9/11 celebration here this weekend, and we had a wonderful Toby Keith cover band. They're called Freedom Tower. They were wonderful. They played.
Wait a second. What is the Toby Keith Freedom Tower? What is that? I don't understand. Why are you in Egypt to celebrate 9/11? Why are you celebrating 9/11?
Well, we're celebrating the messages from the Father God and the messages that he sends us. And we thought Egypt was a fertile place because they're in the throes of a new beginning. And as you know, we need to keep our eye on the Muslim Brotherhood and their ties with groups here like the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Wait a second. You're suggesting that the Muslim Brotherhood has ties
with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and they're trying to undercut Verizon.
Wait.
I mean, it's as plain as the nose on your face, Sam, the ties between the Muslim Brotherhood and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
I think you're getting
confused. That's one of the reasons that we're in Egypt. But also, we have opened a chapter of the Tea Party because we think they can find common cause with the Salafi group, the Salafi Tea Party.
Wait a second. I think you're getting confused between just the use of the word brotherhood, first off, and you're suggesting the Tea Party is setting up a sort of
a chapter in Egypt. And Sam, also we had camel rides. We had camel rides, and I had the most wonderful camel. His name was Toe.
Joe?
Toe. T-O-E.
Oh, you
had camel Toe. He was so wonderful. He was so precious. And I had another one named Zidal.
Zidal.
My favorite was Toe. He was my camel Toe was so wonderful. We had the most wonderful time. But anyway, the Freedom Tower played. Ordinarily, that cover band is a Bob Seger cover band called Night Moves. Do you know them?
No, I don't.
They're really wonderful, but ordinarily they're called Night Moves. But one day out of the year, they're called Freedom Tower.
I see. And then they go to Egypt to play for a Tea Party.
Well, we have very fertile ground. You know, as you know, Sam, Egypt is in the throes of a brand new beginning. I mean, not since Sadat was assassinated has there been a better time to try something new. You know, they tried it with they tried to get Nasser, but he was tricky.
Nasser was incredibly tricky. But listen, I want to try and turn your eyes statewardward because you mentioned that you really loved Rick Perry, but you also
state-sanctioned killings. You know, we want to get government off our backs. Get the government off our backs. That's number one. And also, Sam, the Postal Service. We've been talking about this in Egypt, too, but I know, Rick, the Postal Service is a Ponzi scheme.
The Postal
it's just
Service?
A Ponzi scheme.
Wait a second. How is the Postal Service a Ponzi scheme?
It's just a Ponzi scheme. It's not going to be there for us. You tell a 25-year-old that he's going to be able to send a letter. He's going to look at you like you got six heads. I mean, Sam, we have to reform the Postal Service and impose biblical rules and regulations. I mean, it has to be structured.
What biblical rules and regulations do you want to impose on the Postal Service?
Well, it's a failing system. What do you think? You got to have a biblical worldview. You got to pray that your letters got to where they're gonna go. You can't have any more of this social engineering at the post. It's a Ponzi scheme.
Well, okay, but wait a second. Now I want to just
you ask any Egyptian; they'll tell you the same thing.
But what do Egyptians know about our postal service?
What? Evolution's a Ponzi scheme.
Wait, evolution is a Ponzi scheme? It's not even a scheme. What? There's no.
Can I tell you also about small business? I want to talk more about what we're talking to people in Egypt. We're trying to with the Tea Party and the small business owners. Listen, I want to tell you about a good friend of ours. Her name is Varna Kaintswaller. Varna Kaintswaller, she's from Boone County, and she's been working real hard here in Egypt, and she's a small business owner. She has a small batch corn mash whiskey business in her backyard in Boone County. She does artisanal moonshine, small batch white lightning. And she cannot hire new people because of Obama's unfriendly decisions towards the business community and the unfair regulation and taxes. Do you know how much regulation is on the average still in the backyard in Boone County?
Well, my understanding is that you're actually allowed to just produce a small amount of liquor for yourself.
She can't hire anybody. Varna can't hire anybody because of the taxes and the regulations for her small batch corn mash whiskey artisanal blend.
wait a second. So you're saying that this person who's making liquor in a still in the back, what is she going to, who is she going to hire?
I mean, needs to hire people to distribute it, to mix it, to package it.
So how much taxes? She's paying the lowest
amount.
She's
paying ridiculous taxes, regulation. It's a job killer in Boone County, which I don't know if you're familiar. It's right near Tinker's Holler.
I'm not familiar with Tinker's Holler, but
yes,
please,
you know, and
Catherine, let me just please for 1 minute.
I'm just so scattered. I'm sorry, I'm so scattered.
No, I appreciate
it's you. Just things in Egypt move quickly. And on the stamps that we'd like to have at the new post office, that is not a Ponzi scheme. We're going to have St. Francis of Assisi. We're going to have St. Ignatius, Reba McEntire stamps.
Oh, well, it's
going to be wonderful. And there's only going to be Aramaic. You're only allowed to write your letters in Aramaic.
You're only allowed. That's like the ancient sort of biblical.
Yes. Praise him.
Please, let me just ask you one question.
Sure.
About tonight, there is a debate. You said that you like Rick Perry, but you enjoyed the fact
that
people...
Oh, my God, when he talked about the execution,
no, I know
my heart swelled
but 50
times.
Have you noticed that Michelle Bachmann's numbers now have, like, halved? Her support in the Republican Party has dropped by about half because of the entry of Rick Perry into the race.
That's because she believes in Ephesians, Sam. Ephesians 5:2-2. Women, submit yourselves as you would unto the Lord, so, to your husband, in this case, Rick Perry. Ephesians 5:2-2.
But Rick Perry's not her husband.
It's about mutual respect, much like, Sam, you remember Robert E. Lee would talk about slavery. It's mutual respect.
Robert E. Lee, as in the general?
Robert E. Lee, General
the president of the Confederacy? I don't.
Yes.
I was
now,
not...
he spoke of Ephesians as well for slavery. It's about mutual respect. The slaves knew this. The wives know this.
So,
Ephesians 5:2-2.
So you're saying that the reason why Michelle Bachmann's numbers have gone down is simply because she's submitting herself to Rick Perry.
To Rick Perry, praise him.
Well, why didn't she submit herself to the other Republicans in the race?
Because they don't execute as many people, Sam.
All right.
Praise him. Praise him.
Fair enough.
Father God.
So let me, you are going to be watching the debate tonight.
From Egypt. Yes, so, and we had wonderful, in Ramadan, we had to tone it down at Ramadan in August in Egypt. Our funnel cakes were not selling in August, but I'll tell you, as soon as Ramadan ended, the funnel cakes through the roof, and I'm telling you, we are having a time, and my camel toe is so precious. I love that camel.
Yes, no. Let me just ask you, is there anything in particular that you're looking forward to see in the debate tonight?
More state-sanctioned killing. We want to get out the word that the Postal Service and Evolution are Ponzi schemes and job killers. Evolution's a job killer.
Can I ask why?
Sam, we have got to get rid of these regulations. Also, we had a Mitch McConnell lookalike contest yesterday, and it was so much fun to celebrate 9/11. We had a Mitch, and the winner, what you do is you pay $1 to punch him in the face. And it raises money for the children.
And so we
will get to the bottom of the ties between the Muslim Brotherhood and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Well, listen.
We won't have it. We will not have it. I'm sorry I'm so scattered.
No, Catherine Harris,
What? No low-flow toilets. Low-flow toilets are a job killer. Rick Perry knows this. Keep the government out of my toilet.
Okay, we will.
Thank you so much. The toilet is a Ponzi scheme.
For giving us this preview of the debate. It was...
Low-flow toilet is a Ponzi scheme.
Right. Low-flow toilets, Ponzi scheme, evolution,
it's
Ponzi
a job
scheme.
Killer. A low-flow toilet's a job killer.
Yes, well, I guess there's no... I, 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 I,
Just keep the Eastern liberal establishment out of my toilet.
Catherine Harris, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. I'm sorry, what?
Okay. We've got to say goodbye now.
Hello.
Oh, boy. I think there's a medic. I'm not going to talk out of school, but I think from a medication standpoint, something has gone horribly wrong. Folks, at the risk of upsetting those people who give us iTunes recommendations for our free podcast, please become a member. You get to join me in the better half of the program where I talk more news stories. I take phone calls. I take your IMs. I talk about the first day of school for my daughter. You get to, for the free cast, you get to hear things like Senator Catherine Harris,
nay, Janine Garofalo,
and a breakdown of why raising the Medicare eligibility age is a huge, huge mistake. If you support this program by becoming a member, it's 33 cents a day. You get the extra benefits, and the show continues. Also, you can support this program by going to justcoffee.coop, put the coupon code MAJORITY in the coupon box, get 10% discount. Fair trade, great coffee, tea, and chocolate. You can give us a recommendation on iTunes. You can donate your accounts at donateyouraccount.com/MAJORITYFM. Costs you nothing. Your friends will like you better. And if you buy junk through Amazon, at least buy it through our link. You'll give us a kickback, mitigate the evilness of buying from such a corporate behemoth. All right, folks, you can join me on the flip side, the better half of the program, later in the week. Play that interview I did last week with Bobby Kennedy, and more. See you on the better half.